You know, as ultra runners, we want to smell good.
Well, we don't want to smell bad, that's for sure.
I just raised the bar way up here and you just cut it by half and said, I want to smell good. And you're saying, as long as we don't smell bad, that's good enough.
You know, we want to be able to cool down when we're out there because we're running and it's hot. And the last thing you want to do is shove something under your armpits to prevent you from cooling. That's what the body uses, sweat to cool. And why would you want an antiperspirant underneath your arms? But at the same time, Scott, you don't want to offend your fellow runners because sometimes that can happen if you're, you know, a little bit smelly.
There are a lot of competitors in this market, and there's a lot of stuff out there that is that you're putting on a roll-on or a stick and you're putting underneath your arms that is not healthy. In fact, some of those things have been linked to serious diseases.
Well, you would not put something with full of chemicals underneath your arm any more than you'd put it on your tongue, Scott. You've got to think.
So we want to tell you about Native deodorant. This is something that you said your daughter was using Native deodorant before we even heard of them.
Yeah, she saw that I had some. She goes, oh, Dad, I've been using Native for a long time. In fact, there are 8,000 five-star reviews from their customers.
It works. People love it. It's healthy. It's ingredients that you know, and it's at a good price.
And it's worth it. You know, we've had some, our favorite, coconut and vanilla has been our favorite stick, and eucalyptus and mint. I like anything with eucalyptus, Scott.
I don't think, one of the other ones is cucumber and mint. I'm not sure I'm a cucumber and mint guy.
Well,
you know, that's why they have different flavors out there. But I will tell you,
we don't eat it, Scott. Flavors. Scents. They're called scents.
I will tell you, when we first hooked up with Native deodorant, I was skeptical. I'm an antiperspirant guy. And I was skeptical to try a deodorant because I'm a sweater. You've seen me on the trail. I sweat a lot. And I was very concerned, and I will tell you, I am a convert. I've gone through 2 sticks of Native deodorant, and I'm in love with it. And it's the heat of the season.
And you can save
20%. 20% if you go to nativedeodorant.com and use the promo code TRN. What do you do, Don?
You go save 20%. Native.com.
NativeDeodorant.com. NativeDeodorant.com.
Promo code TRN. Did I get that part right?
Yeah, and the part that they'll get right is they 20% off. Try Native Deodorant.
The finest running apparel you'll ever experience. What am I talking about, Scott?
Path Projects.
That's right. And not only for running, but just the other day, Scott, it's hot. We've had over 100 degree temperature. So I'm going to put on a pair of shorts and I pull out a pair of shorts, and you know what?
They weren't the Path Projects. You're saying you put on a different pair.
No, I put on the Path, the non-running, the go to the store, the go out.
Oh, yeah.
They were fantastic. They fit right. They're just like their running shorts. All the characteristics. They good pockets, good movement, good fit. They're built for runners, Scott.
How did you look, Don? That's my thing. I don't care how they feel. Well, no, I do. But how did you look?
Oh, I spent at least 15, 20 minutes parading in front of the mirror, Scott, and making selfies. I sent them to you. You remember that.
I did not get those selfies, and if I did, I wouldn't admit it. Pathprojects.com. You can also link over from our partners page. Check them out. We've been talking about it for a while. If you haven't, you need to crawl out from underneath that rock and get yourself some Path Projects. They have different shirt colors now, and it's just comfortable, good quality at an affordable price. They cut out that middleman.
I'll remind you, they have hats and also bandanas, oversized a bit, so you can put some ice in it and actually use it as a runner.
We love Path Projects. You will too. Go to pathprojects.com. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And we've made a move.
We are in Studio W,
no,
Scott.
It's the loft.
Well, you know,
I nicknamed it the loft.
As you may, I'm going to refer to it as Studio W just out of respect for our old Studio G that we've migrated.
We've migrated a little bit. We have some background visuals. You can't see them because this is an audio podcast.
Right. But Scott went to a garage sale and bought some books so he could impress anybody on the other end of this recording.
I have a library.
Yeah, and when are those due, Scott? I'm going to watch those to see if they rotate a bit. I don't think you own a single one.
Do they still charge for past due books?
Yes, 15 cents a day.
Is that what it is?
I don't know.
Hey, we have Chad Wright again with us today. Hey, Chad, how's it going, man?
What is up, young man? I'm fired up to be here with y'all today.
You know, we're again, this is an audio podcast, but you got to see Chad. Chad is like kicked back, relaxed. I think he has a beverage sitting right there. He has his legs up. He's like prepared for a nice casual conversation.
And a boom mic. He's coming down with some audio ads that are pretty good.
Little does he know, this is a hard-hitting podcast where we ask the tough questions.
Yeah, you should.
Like, where did you run today, Chad?
Merchants Mill Pond State Park today. That's my prime running grounds over here in Virginia.
What kind of humidity do you run in there? I think I would melt in the humidity.
Bro, we're just going to call it 100% humidity every single day.
Isn't that swimming?
Yeah, pretty much.
You do the breaststroke today. Is that what your, that was on the training plan?
Side stroke, combat swimmer side stroke.
Nice.
Hey, we recently saw an Instagram post that Chad posted, and I thought, boy, that has a lot of meaning. It has a lot of applications. And so we reached out to Chad, and he agreed to come on. But before we get to that, it's been a while since we've caught up with you. You have a couple inches of beard growth there, and we want to know what have you been up to? What races you been doing? What are you training for? What's going on?
Life has been good, Don. I tell you, it's I guess the most recent thing I've done, a couple of days ago, I went out to New York. I broke a rule of mine. I went north of Virginia. I don't try not to do that very often over here on the East Coast. It gets real crowded up there. But went up there to do a little training evolution with a guy named Jesse Itzler. And if you don't know Jesse, you need to find him and follow him, because he is one of the most outstanding humans alive on the earth today, in my opinion. And so I got to go up and spend a day training with Jesse and another guy named Mark Brown. Mark was a NFL player. He played for the Jets. And we did a little 50-mile training run. Mm-hmm. And we learned a lot of cool lessons. There were a few rules for our run that day. First off, it was in the last man standing format. So the second rule was we had to run until I said stop. So these guys, Jesse and Mark, did not know how long we were going to run that day. For all they knew, we were going to run 5 hours or 24 hours.
Okay, Chad, I've got to get some context here. You made it sound like it was a big event, like we're all trying in lottery style to get into this, and then you drop on us that there were, it sounds like maybe just three of you, and you made this up, called up your buddies, and you said, hey, I got an idea.
And printed up some bibs on your dot matrix printer.
Which one was it? Is it a lottery, or is it a Chad creation?
No, this was a Chad creation. Okay. This wasn't a formal race or anything. It was just a good time with buddies. But there are so many lessons learned during that day. It's the reason I wanted to share it with you guys. But yeah, so the rule was we were going to run as far as I wanted to run. So that was pretty cool. The other guys didn't know how far we were going. The other rule was is no negativity the whole day. And the way we intentionally directed our conversation is each loop we had to share something that we were thankful for, and then we would talk around those topics of what we were thankful for throughout that hour. Another thing that we did was no cussing, and that might sound crazy to you guys, but you might notice I don't cuss, and that's not a Christian thing. That is because none of those words in and of themselves have a positive meaning. So we cut those words out of our speech, and you'll be amazed at what that does for your mindset when you make that switch.
I would like to just, I have a couple things. Talking about one, the no cussing rule and positivity, I imagine just anything negative, any negative comments would share that same disadvantage of maybe throwing out a four-letter word that we're all familiar with. I mean, just anything negative. Just my foot hurts. You know, how much longer? It's getting hot out. You know, I've said them all, and I and so I can list them. I could go on for over an hour of how many things.
We could do a week's worth of podcasts. I've complained about negative phrases.
Oh yeah,
no doubt, no doubt. And that, and you're right, Scott. That was the rule. It you know, no negativity period. And we were able to maintain that throughout that entire 12 hours of running. And so basically, at the end of this run, Mark Brown's a 220-something pound linebacker. He added almost a marathon to his distance PR that day. And Jesse, I think he ran 50 miles for the first time in 13 years. And it was all based around mindset training, power of the spoken word, suffer in silence, don't give a voice to your pain. And it was just awesome to see how those things worked. And I asked these guys a question at the beginning of the run before we towed the line. On paper, I was the best runner there, obviously most experienced on paper. And I asked those guys, I said, "Hey guys, do y'all think that I'm a better runner than you?" And I was getting ready to hammer them for having a self-defeating mindset before we even started the run. And both of them looked at me and said, "No, not really. We don't think you're better than us." And I said, "Roger that. These guys got what it takes. They know how to listen. They know how to learn. We're going to have an awesome day." And that's what happened. It was amazing just to see those techniques work and push through these awesome barriers.
So what did you forecast when you went out there and you put this thing together and you said, you know, I'm going to call Jesse and I'm going to call Mark and I'm going to see if these guys want to do it? Did you expect them to say yes so quick?
Well, actually, Jesse had reached out to me. So Jesse reached out to me, found me on social and sent me a quick message, and we lined it up from there. And like I said, Jesse is a sponge, man. He constantly wants to better himself. He constantly wants to build his life resume. That's one of his big things. So I think he really wanted to see what I had to offer. And it was my pleasure to go out there and spend the day with those guys. That was actually the first time that we had ever met. Was cool. when I flew out there to do the training run. And what's cool about it, another cool thing is you've got a Jewish guy from New York. You've got a black guy that grew up in the inner cities of New Jersey, and you've got an old country boy from Georgia. We've never met each other, and we spend a day inflicting adversity on ourselves. And at the end of 12 hours, we feel like brothers. And it was born in that furnace of adversity, and just a friendship, a bond. It was made in one day. And I know you guys have experienced that out on the trail. That's one of my favorite things about ultra running, trail running, is the brotherhood that's born through that self-inflicted adversity.
Hey, Chad, so let me get my head wrapped around this. So Jesse calls you. He finds out that you're this runner from down south and says, "Hey, I want you to come up and I want you to teach myself and Mark how to run far." Was that their purpose? What was their purpose of inviting you up there?
Well, I think Jesse's ran a 100-miler before, and he's already a good runner, and he doesn't really have any quit in him. And same goes for Mark. I think the purpose was the specific mindset. The things that we talked about last episode, power of the spoken word, power of positivity, don't give a voice to your pain, don't die in the chair, all those things. They wanted to really see how those work firsthand. And you don't really know how well they work until you see them work in your own situation. And I think that's what they wanted to get out of our time together. And the whole brotherhood and the friendship part of it was just a byproduct, which was awesome. We accomplished all the goals that we set out to accomplish.
Did they know the rules before you got there?
No, they didn't know the rules. I actually dropped the rules on them, I think about an hour before we started. We started at 6 a.m. So they, like I said, man, they rogered up. Those guys, it's so amazing to spend a day with people that are willing to listen and learn. And they both have those type of personalities. So they rogered up.
So, and I want to make sure I have the rules clearly. I wrote them down here. There are really two rules. One, you get to say when to quit. And number two is no negativity. And then there's some subcategories in there where you're sharing something positive at the end, after each loop, and no cussing. Were there any other rules, or was that it?
That was pretty much it. I mean, that was what, and of course, you know, all the other things, don't die in the chair. I mean, we made a commitment to each other to carry on until this thing was over, whenever the finish line came, you know.
Did you have an idea of when the finish line would come? Did you have a 50-mile target in your head, or were you thinking, I think I'm going to run until I get some niggles in my leg or something?
So I didn't have a pre-planned distance. I really wanted to just see these guys and see where they were at. And I knew I knew the level that I wanted to push to. The goal of this training event was not to break each other or to find our limits. I wanted to push to a certain level. And, you know, you can look in another man's eyes and see when they get to that level. And once we got there, that was when it was over.
So, you know, if I were Jesse, I'd look back at Mark and I'd say, hey, did you see him with a headlamp? Does he have lights on him? How far are we going today? How much food does he have? I just got to gauge it that way.
I'm sure they were thinking about all that stuff. And another cool lesson that came out of that run was it doesn't matter, which is an awesome thing. And we're not going to go into what it means to say it doesn't matter. I think you guys need to have Jesse on the show and let him talk about it doesn't matter. That would be a great episode. So hopefully in the future, we'll get to hear his side of the story.
Yeah, that sounds good. So take us through a little bit of any experience. You know, if you ran 50 miles, if the three of us were running 50 miles, there's no doubt there'd be some lows for one of us, all of us along the way at various times. So when you recognize, when you look in your fellow runner's eyes and you go, you know what, he's struggling right now. How do you handle that with no negativity? How do you keep it inside? How do you keep from making it part of the conversation? What do you do to change it?
It's not that I'm looking at him and saying he's necessarily, okay, he's struggling right now. I'm just watching. I'm watching his body. I'm watching his gait. You know, I'm trying to push to that point, to the edge of where it becomes unhealthy and where we you know, nearly break ourselves. And that's where we want to stop. But just looking, you know, and having a conversation around that, you can say, okay, this, you know, I'm really hurting right now. Or you can say, man, I'm getting full benefit out of this training run right now. Yeah, it freaking hurts, but it's supposed to hurt. And if it wasn't hurting, I would be disappointed because I want to get the full benefit out of what we're trying to accomplish today.
And I look at it that way sometimes too. You're deep into a run, regardless of what mile, and things are hard and you've got X number more to go, maybe five more to go. And I think to myself, you know what? 3 hours or whatever it was before this, I did all this as a prerequisite just to get here. This is really about the next 5 miles. Everything before that was just preparatory for this moment. And so I try to re-engage and reset my mind to it's about the next five, and all this other work was just to get me to a point where now I can really grow.
That's it. Yep. You can't cheat it. You can't cheat it. You got to go. That was something cool. You go through the first 8 hours of the run, and that's the warm up.
Yep.
You can't cheat this stuff, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I, as Don's telling me this, I think back to the first time Don sprung this little nugget of gold on me. Mm-hmm. We were running up to Rick's house. That's where we were finishing, which is a place on a local run here. And it's a climb up to his house. So it's maybe a mile, three quarters of a mile.
It's your story, yeah.
Anyway, so we had been out there for hours on a training run, and we get to the turnoff to go up this trail, which is uphill, and I wanted to walk the thing. And Don says, no, this is what the training is. We did all that other stuff for this section of the training. This is where the work starts. The other stuff was just preparatory. This is where the work starts. And I went, that's a stupid idea, Freeman. But it's very good. It's
it is, brother.
You did
that's
it.
Where you grow.
Yeah, you did it.
I did it. And I think we ran the entire thing. At least that's what my memory serves me.
Mine too.
Hey, so I have a question for you. So you have this inner city guy, and you have a New York, I think the other guy was from New York. Jesse's from New York, right?
Yeah.
Which I assume both of those environments does have a lot of cursing. How hard was it for them to turn that off, especially when they got into periods where they were hurting or suffering? How hard was it for them to did you have a swear jar? Did they have to put a dollar into the swear jar every time, or how did that work?
Dude, I'm telling you, these guys, these are solid dudes. So they were able to turn it off. Now, as far as how hard it was for them, you would have to ask them that. That would be a personal question that they've got to answer. But we were able to go through that whole run without using those negative words. And I was so impressed by what they were able to do and the changes they were able to make right then in the moment. You know what I mean?
Hey, before we get into this post that Scott identified a week or so ago, I could control what comes out of my mouth, but I can't control what happens inside my head. Mm. How do you, Chad, through your experience and your training with the SEALs and all the things that you've done, your multi-day runs, how do you curb that internal conversation?
Internal conversation is tough, man, because you can't control what pops into your head. But I think the important thing is that when it stays in your head, it doesn't have any power. It's not real. When you speak it, it becomes real. It becomes waves, something that can be measured. And that's when it gains power. So the things in your head, the thing that we used that day was it doesn't matter. And that would really quiet a lot of those things that popped into your head. And there's a lot that goes into that kind of mantra there again. You know, that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, I think that the brain is really trying to speak sense to you, and it makes up all kinds of things. It will fabricate issues internally, whether it's your stomach, whether it'll cause a cramp somewhere or a hot spot. I know those hot spots are real. We can measure them. We can look at them. We can pop them and tape them. I mean, I get that. But the body really uses those at the extreme to try to convince you to quit this nonsense. And so it doesn't matter, I think, is a great mantra to use out there. In the scheme of things, it really doesn't matter that there's a little hot spot on the skin. But boy, when you're out there, it becomes bigger than big. It becomes the primary focus because the body is really trying to curb your activity.
That's it, brother. And the flesh is weak, man. And I despise my flesh for its weakness. But you know, you got to just, the mind is stronger than the flesh, and you got to realize that and realize it doesn't matter what's going on with the flesh, because it's going to rock and roll. It's going to recover. It's going to come out the other end.
Well, and I like the other part of no negativity rule, where you said we're going to say something that we're thankful for. So you're replacing those negative thoughts in your head. So maybe those negative thoughts don't give any kind of measurable effect, but you took it the next step further and said, let's replace those negative thoughts with, let's think about things. You have, you know, the next X number of miles, you need to come up with something that you're thankful for. I would love to hear how that played into these strong athletes that you're playing with on this race or on this day.
It was huge, brother. And there again, you guys get Jesse or Mark on the show and let them tell that side of the story, because I think they gained a lot of valuable lessons, and they'll be able to articulate that to you guys a lot better than I will be able to. So,
hey, let's talk about this Instagram. Was it on Instagram?
It was on Instagram.
An Instagram post. Yeah. Before we get there, as Scott's pulling it up, how long are you going to grow that beard?
I have sworn off the razor, brother. When I got out of the Navy, I said I'm never going to shave my face or cut my hair again. So,
oh my, here,
it's got free reign, man.
At what point do you start stepping on it? I mean, that's going to slow you down. That's going to pull your chin. You can't climb hills with a beard like that.
I mean, we can always braid it up.
Okay.
I mean,
all right. Yeah, that's true.
Hey, does that include trimming? I mean, do you do a little trimming?
I don't touch it, brother. It is what it is. I had to shave my face for the first 32 years of my life, and I'm done with it.
You came out of the womb with a beard? How old are you, Chad? You look like a 32-year-old man to me right now.
My bad, guys. Maybe not 32 years, but hey, I don't know what I was thinking. I'm not good with numbers.
We can't let facts get in the way of a good story, but we can talk about your post. Where did that originate, the communicate?
Shoot, move, communicate.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll tell you where that originated with. That's a tactic that we use in the SEAL teams, shoot, move, and communicate. And I'm just starting to learn, since I haven't been out of the teams long, I'm just kind of transitioning into this whole new world of civilian life. And I'm starting to learn that all these tactics and all these mantras that we use in the SEAL teams that revolve around warfare, you can apply those same tactics and mantras to your life and the things that you're doing. So that's where it came from. In a team shoot, when you take fire, when you take contact from the enemy, the first thing that you want to do is return fire. So that's the shoot. The next thing you want to do is move, because fire draws fire, right? If the enemy sees you shooting at them, they're going to shoot back wherever they see that muzzle flash. So you've got to move immediately after you shoot. And then once you move, you have to communicate to your other team members where you've moved to. That way they know what their new field of fire is. They have to adjust to your movements. So that's where that came from.
Hey, you guys are pretty high tech, I imagine, at the SEALs. There's probably nothing uncovered that you guys that don't have access to, because you're the number one elite fighting force in the entire world. How do you communicate? Do you guys just hand signals? Do you guys have, are you hooked up radio contacts so you can communicate in that respect?
It totally depends on the situation, brother. When you're in a firefight, no, you don't communicate over comms. You are yelling out. There's no reason to be quiet when you're in the middle of a firefight, because obviously it's loud anyways. So we're just yelling out. We're using hand signals, just any way that you can project your location to the guys that are within sight or hearing distance of you.
I imagine you were attracted to this long run endurance stuff just from the training and the experiences that you've had of adrenaline rushing and difficulties and obstacles and thinking through them. I would think there's a parallel, I'm not trying to minimize the fact that somebody shooting at you is much different than running into an aid station. I recognize that there's a difference.
There's a little bit more of a motivation to move.
Yeah.
There is a parallel though, and I posted that post not from a tactical standpoint, but you'll see the parallels that I listed are parallels that apply in life. So you're starting off with shoot. What I look at that shoot, you know, that word, obviously in battle it means engage your enemy, but in life it means constantly and consistently engaging the things that stand between you and your goal or you and your purpose until those things are crushed. And I can give you a perfect example of that in running. And it actually happened at the training run that we just talked about. So Mark has a lot of problems with cramping, and you guys know you're not going to buck a cramp. I mean, cramps are about as the worst thing that can happen to you out on a run. And so the whole day, Mark was just battling these cramps. And at the end of the day, we you know, went up to the house, ate dinner, everybody went to bed. And it would have been really easy for Mark to say, well, I just cramp. That's just the body that I have. That's how I'm made. Maybe I'm not made to run this distance. and I'm going to just have to cramp as long as I want to run. But instead, when Mark walked down to eat breakfast the next day, he had set up that night until late in the night researching how he can fix this cramping problem. What does he need to do with his nutrition? What does he need to do to his body to work through this problem and crush it? So that was him engaging that issue that stood between him and his running goals. And he put the time and effort into determining a solution through research. Excuse me, guys. Instead of just saying, oh, well, this is just the cards I'm dealt.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, either on the trail or off the trail in real life, sometimes push off those problems. It's easier not to stay up late and research. It's it's easier to just ignore and just suffer some of the consequences. And when things happen, you've got to focus on it, identify it, focus on it, figure it out, and then implement a strategy. And until you do that, it's just going to be that monkey on your back. It's going to be weight in your pack, and you'll carry that with you until you figure out how to disassemble it and toss it.
That's exactly right. So identify those things during your runs. Identify the things that you're struggling with, or the things, whether it's your stomach or maybe it's a certain muscle group like your calves or something like that. Identify them and then engage that issue through research and fix it. Okay. That's what we want to do. We want to crush those things that stand between us and our goals. And that's how the shooting portion of that mantra applies to running.
Yeah, and we're all different. Some people can have a stomach of iron. Some people have never experienced a cramp, and some people, you know, cramp getting out of the car. So there's all kinds of different bodies. We're all unique, and one solution for somebody isn't the solution for the next person. So it takes some research, and it takes some patience, and it takes some community to try to help solve problems, because you can't figure them all out on your own.
That's right. That's right. And it takes all those things, and it takes action, man. You have to apply yourself to crush these enemies or these things that stand between you and your goal or purpose.
I think that's the key thing. It's an action word. It's not sit back and think about it. It's an action word. You have to get information. You have to do things. You have to, in Mark's case, go and find out what things he needs to do, but then do them. Like that.
And it might not be just what you're doing on the trail. It could be how you set yourself up the day before. It could be hydration for 2 days before. It could be, you know, a number of things, not stretching, and we could list a number of things that might cause that, but it's not always run day stuff.
That's exactly right. Yep.
And this plays into, you know, the old mantra that the best ultra runners are problem solvers. Even on the run, they're constantly thinking about what is the problem and how can I solve it. So I think that plays very well into running. And then we could talk about it on another podcast, how this could play into business or personal relationships.
We just talked to Jeff Browning on the previous podcast and recognized problem solvers are great ultra runners, and he is one of those great problem solvers. And in speaking with him and sharing some time with him, he's a very intelligent man that really his gears spin in the ultra endurance sports. And he's thinking about his body. He's thinking about what he puts in and what comes out and where his maximum effort levels are and when he can borrow from the future a bit and when he needs to catch up. He's got all that stuff continuously going into through his mind as he's putting out a 50 or 100 mile run.
That's right, brother. And you know, that's the thing. Some people, when you get shot at, you might want to just put your head in the dirt and hide, but true warriors are going to get back up and they're going to engage that enemy. They're going to engage that problem and crush it. So that's the mindset that we want to have. When something bad's going on in a run or in life, it's not stick your head in the sand and hope it fixes itself. It's putting in the time, effort, and application to fix those problems.
So you've got a guy, an unknown, that's going to run with you. Would you rather have a guy that had fitness, he's prepared fitness level, you know he's qualified, or someone that is a positive thinker, not so much qualified for the distance, but just a go-forward positive attitude guy or gal?
Dude, I'm sold on mindset. Yeah. I mean, mindset is everything to me personally, because look, I don't run 100-mile weeks. I don't do all that stuff. I rely so heavily on my mindset, and it always gets me across the finish line, and it usually gets me there somewhere between first place and 10th place almost every single time. And it's not because that I train any harder than anybody else there in the top 10. I can guarantee you I trained far less than they did, because that's just how I train. But it's my mindset that gets me there. I promise you, that is so powerful, man.
Hey, Chad, back to this, thinking of something you're grateful for on this training run with these two guys, is that something new, or is that, do you practice that when you're out training, even by yourself? Do you say, hey, at mile five, I'm going to talk to myself or think about something I'm grateful for? How did that come about?
That's something that I constantly do, Scott. Look, man, the trail and the woods is my church. When I'm out there, I'm constantly thinking of what I'm grateful for, just by nature of the things that are surrounding me. So I'm always in that mindset when I'm running. And it sounds kind of corny when you approach these other guys and you say, hey, we're going to talk about things that we're grateful for. I mean, it sounds like an exercise that, you know, you would do with a child or something. Mm-hmm. But it's so powerful when you could stay in that mindset. But that's where that came from. It's just a natural thing to me. And whenever I'm out trail running, like I said, that's the mindset that I'm in almost all the time. And that's what drives me to keep going out here and get on the trail, you know, because it feels good.
Hey, let's talk about the power of people. Let's talk about how runners bind or join forces to get something done. Scott and I, we've said this before on podcasts. We've had a chance to announce some finishes and notice that people come in groups, and they combine resources to get through. Do you think that there is a psychological, you know, as you see groups of people come in, and there's the question some here somewhere, and if anybody identifies it, they should ask it.
I got it. But I got your question.
Yeah, good. Ask the question to yourself, Chad, and then if you would, answer it.
Yes, there is power in groups of people, and I can tell you where I saw that just on this past run was when Mark or Jesse would share something that they were thankful for. It would give me a boost of energy. And even though it might not have been something that I was thankful for because it was something that pertained to a personal experience of theirs, just by them expressing that thankfulness, it gave me a boost of energy every single time. It never didn't work. So that's that power when you've got, you know, multiple people together, all in that positive mindset. You can feed off of one another 100%.
Just like you fed off my stumbling words, and you found the question perfectly, Chad. Well done.
Hey, I have a question, a hypothetical question. Let's say you were to go do this thing again, and instead of running together, all three of you, you put 20 minutes staggered starts. Same rules apply. No cussing. Think of something you're thankful for. Stay positive, and Chad gets to decide when you're going to stop. But now they're all alone with nobody around them. Do you think the outcome would have been the same or as powerful?
The outcome would have been the same. Those guys would have got the job done with those tools, but the day would have been more difficult for each and every one of us.
So it's much easier to be in a pack or a tribe as you're going through these adversities.
Yes, 100%. It is. Yep. That's just like a SEAL team, man. We work within our platoon. We train together. We bleed together. We sweat together. We go to war together. And when you take that bond out of the equation, none of us can really accomplish any amazing feats by ourselves. It comes from the power of that platoon and that group. And it's the same way with runners, no doubt.
So let's talk about the three of you out there, and let's talk about positioning. Somebody's in the middle, somebody's on the end, somebody's up front. Do you find that it's important to rotate that to give, you know, maybe each loop somebody takes a lead? Because I've noticed that when I'm up front, I feel a bit more responsibility to get out there and not fall back and to keep the pace right, because I'm responsible for the two guys. When I'm in the middle, I feel somewhat protected. Like I'm in between these two guys. I'm feeding from both of them. And when I'm at the end, well, I don't want to tell you at the end because no one knows where I'm at. And sometimes I fall back a little bit. And so there's some dynamics that happens in the positioning of the group of three as well.
Of course, it's important to switch that out, and you hit the nail on the head with the three aspects of kind of how you feel when you're in each position. And I think that if you're with a group of runners for a while, that begins to just happen naturally. You look at each other, our natural body movements, what you're seeing in your other guy's eyes, and yeah, you pick up that lead if you're able, or you fall back when you feel like you need to, and you can depend upon your brother that's out there competing with you to pick up that lead position. And it is important to swap that out, but it will eventually get to a point where it just happens naturally and you don't even have to talk about it.
And I think as training partners, and it's important to mix that up a little bit too. We fall into ruts of the same path, we say in the same
pace,
and it's also good to make sure position is altered or swapped out a little bit too.
Yes, I agree.
So let's move on. The first part was shoot. The second part makes sense, and it's related, is move. And the way that you said it on the Instagram post, and then you can elaborate here, Chad, is move says stay flexible. Don't be hesitant to shift as opportunities present themselves. Nothing is permanent.
Oh yeah, and that's so deep. It's so applicable to running, isn't it?
I like how you said opportunities, because you put everything that can happen to you is an opportunity. You didn't say that catastrophe struck. Chaos is happening upon us. You said opportunities. So good, bad, or indifferent, you're identifying changes as opportunities.
Yeah.
That's it, man. And the way so there's two trains of thought on this move portion. So for me, I do everything totally off of feel. I eat off of, and my diet is and my water, my pace, all those things are off. I like to perform those tasks just off of how I feel. And so that allows me to be very flexible and to kind of work around things that might happen or obstacles that may come up or opportunities that may present themselves. It gives me that flexibility, but you've really got to know your body. You've got to have an intimate relationship with your body and had put yourself into some hard situations before you reach that point that you can really just go purely off of feel, right? There's another train of thought to this though, because there are people out there that need structure. They need a plan during their race, right? You guys have probably known both those type of people. And so a lot of people need that plan. And there's a mantra that goes along with those people that need that plan. And it's called, it comes again from the SEAL teams, and it's plan your dive, dive your plan. And what that means is before you go out on a dive, and you're feeling good and you're in a nice warm classroom and you've got your maps and everything spread out in front of you, you plan all the legs that you're going to do on your dive to get you to your, I guess, final destination and your mission. So you may have to circumnavigate all these piers and obstacles underwater, and then you finally get to the ship, you plant your explosives on the ship, and then you get out of there. So all those legs are planned out, bearings, distances, time, all that good stuff. But when you get out there on your dive and it's dark, and when you're diving at night, it is dark. And we're usually in nasty water, and you can't see anything, and you're cold and miserable. It's so easy when stuff like that gets hard to deviate from your plan, because your head starts telling you, well, maybe if I just go, you know, a little bit off this bearing, then maybe that's going to be a better route. But you don't want to do that, because you made that plan for a reason, when your mind was working good, when everything felt good. So that's what you got to stick to. So those people that, you know, applying that to running, those people that have that mindset that I need a plan because that's the way my brain ticks. When you make that plan and you show up on race day and you get deep into this race and stuff starts to really suck, you got to stick with that plan because you made that plan for a reason. And we actually got to see that happen on this training run. So Jesse is one of those people that his mind, that's the way he ticks. He needs a plan. He's completely opposite from me. I go totally off of feel. He needs the plan. So his plan was to run for 6 minutes, walk for 4 minutes. And that was his pace. And when stuff got really, really tough, and we were, you know, we say he had a, you know, was having a rough loop. There was a voice inside his head that would say, maybe I don't really have to stick to this 6-4 plan. And when he would deviate from that, stuff would start to fall apart. So I would tell him, hey, man, plan your dive, dive your plan. And he would get back on that pace that he had predetermined for himself for a reason. And once he got back on that pace, he was fine. So there's two different mindsets to that move. I believe the going off of feel, being flexible, being able to change on the fly, that works best for me.
So, you know, let's relate this, how this plays out with three different runners, somebody that's running by feel, a plan. And then Mark, we don't know at this point where he sets, cause you haven't told us, but in a race, when something falls apart or needs to change, then the runners separate. In training, you might find a different training partner, but in this situation, when you have a team goal and it's, hey, we just met, and at the end of the day, we're still going to be a cohesive unit, how do you juggle that, run your plan, listen to your mind, and then whatever, wherever Mark lies, he's going to be somewhere in between or in either one of your camps? How do you manage three different personalities in a day event like this?
So what we did for that day is that 6-4 plan that Jesse and Mark was on board with that plan also. Mm-hmm. That was their plan, and they're training for an upcoming event. So I stuck to their plan the whole day.
Got it.
And that was pretty cool for me because it allowed me to see the flip side of the coin. It allowed me to see how that plan works for other people, because previous to that experience, when I would have people approach me and ask me about racing, I would, the only advice I could give them was just go off feel, because I had never seen the plan work, because I had never utilized that type of mindset. But I got to see it work that day. I got to see the importance of having a plan and how for certain people, that's the way to go. So that's what we did during that day. And I got a lot of value from it.
Did you ever flip it where we're going to run 4 and walk 6? Did you ever manipulate that, or did you just stick straight to it because you run the plan?
We stuck to the plan the whole time. We never flipped it. And that's the importance of a plan. When you start flipping it, it's no longer your plan.
Yeah, agreed.
Hey, Chad,
good point.
I'm just curious, a little side note here. as a SEAL and somewhat, and you self-proclaimed you like to be a guy that, that goes by feel. How did that relate when you were a SEAL? Did you go by feel, or did you adhere to the plan your dive, dive your plan?
That's always mission driven. So on a something like a dive, where it's very technical, you're underwater, it's dark, it's hard for you to see your environment. So for a dive, that plan your dive, dive your plan scenario is essential. Now, from a like a land warfare standpoint, you had to have more flexibility, because if you take secondary or tertiary contacts, you've got to be flexible at that point and be able to react. So you really had to use both sides of the coin.
Are we ready to move on to the third? Communicate.
Let's go to communicate. What you said in your post is your mission to people. Let me see if I can read this right. Your mission to people that will provide encouragement. Speak your purpose into existence.
I love that, man. And what I meant by communicate, and there's two sides to this communicate thing. One, during your race, you've got to communicate to your crew and the people that are there to support you what you need, okay? You've got to keep that line of communication open. That's essential for your success at a race. So if you come into an aid station, your crew's standing by, you know, they're ready to help, but you come in there with a bad attitude and you don't really want to talk and, you know, you're moaning and groaning. Well, that's not communicating to them what you need, so they cannot help you. So keep those lines of communication open with the people that are there to help you during your race, okay? That's so important.
And that includes aid station workers. They're volunteering, yes, to help make you successful. So if you're showing up to a race and, well, I don't have a crew, so this doesn't apply to me. Oh, yeah, it applies to you, because aid station workers out there are your extended family, and they're there, your extended crew, and they're there to help you. That's why they showed up, and that's why we volunteer to show up to help people meet their goals.
That's right. And when you communicate to those people, be calm, clear, and concise. Mm. So before you communicate to those people what you need, stop, take a breath, think about what you're going to say, and then say it to them calmly, clearly, and concisely. Okay. Don't just spew it out of your mouth. And that's, again, that's how we talk on comms in the teams. Before you come up on comms, you take a pregnant pause and you think about, okay, what am I going to say? How do I want to say it? How do I want to, you know, disseminate this information to get the maximum return?
I can lose about a half mile before I get to the aid station, really just working through that conversation. What do I need? And so it almost feels like the aid station is a little bit longer, because I'm already in the aid station as I'm thinking through, you know, what am I going to ask for? What sounds good? I got to make sure I empty my trash out of the back of this pack. I mean, just the steps that I'm going to take as I'm in that aid station, not regretting after I leave. It's like, how long am I going to carry these wrappers? You know, that these are things that if you have time to prepare and think through this stuff. So coming in is the right time to go through that dialogue, through that communication. So like you said, when you show up to crew or aid station workers, you can clearly state, here's what I need. Because they're going to ask you, what can I get you? And that shouldn't be a surprise question to you. It's coming. You know, however many aid stations are there, that's how many times somebody's going to ask you, hey, what can I get you? You should have a whole list, if you have one, of what you need.
That's exactly right. I really like that technique, Don, thinking about that before you come into the aid station. And the second point, sorry, guys, I'm a little sick. I'm sorry about all this coughing. The second point to communicate is I'm big on communicating your mission only to people that are going to provide encouragement, to people that believe in you. And I'm such a firm believer in that. So I'm careful when I have a lofty goal or say it's you want to run 100 miles for the first time. I am careful about who I, you know, who I tell those things to. And I think that's essential to your mindset and the things that are being fed into you. And I want to make this completely clear. And I've got a little example here. So Don, let's say you own a Porsche. Okay.
I'm good with the story so far.
Okay. So Don owns a Porsche. When Don goes and picks his brand new Porsche up from the dealership, the manufacturer tells Don, we built this car to go 200 miles an hour. It was designed by a master craftsman, and he knows that that car will go 200 miles per hour. So that's what the car will go, right?
That's absolutely. So, that's why I paid the big bucks.
That's it, man. So here comes old Chad, and he drives an old 94 Toyota pickup that's got like 70-something horsepower. He doesn't know anything about a Porsche, and he comes up to Don and says, Don, that Porsche will only go 120 miles per hour. What are you going to do, Don? You're going to laugh at Chad and say, dude, you don't know what you're talking about. Get out of here. Because you know your car will go 200 miles per hour, and Chad has no clue about a Porsche in the first place. So how that applies to us as people, we were also designed by a master craftsman, and you are designed to go as fast as you need to go within your lane and your purpose. There's no limit to what you can do. So when somebody outside comes to you and tells you, you can't go this fast, or you can't go this far, or you can't do this or that, you just need to look at them and just laugh and say, no, I've read my manual. I know how fast I can go. There's no limit to what I can do. So just laugh at that person and tell them to get out of your hair, because it's ridiculous.
I like that. I like that.
Sweet.
So on the communication thing, I was going and trying to apply it to a number of different places in my life. And I was thinking, you know, if you're communicating properly to those who are stakeholders in whatever you're doing, whether it's a 50-mile run, or whether it's getting a project done, or achieving goals with your family, if you're communicating properly, it avoids any frustrations. I think a lot of times I make assumptions that people know. And let's take this to the run. You know, as I'm coming into mile 38 of a 50-mile run, I'm assuming that my crew knows that I'm tired and that I'm cramping, and they should have the things ready for me that I need. That's frustrating, because when you get there, they're frustrated because they're not able to help you, and you're frustrated because you're not getting the resources or whatever you're needing. And you can take that to business or personal life. I love the communication piece. I don't think, in fact, I'll ask you this question. Can you over communicate, Chad? Is that a possibility?
Hey, I'm going to interrupt you, Chad, and just plant this seed. You said suffer in silence is one of the keys. I just want to throw that at you to Scott's question. So just to complicate things, because that's my role.
No, I love that. And if you talk about suffer in silence, so I guess in a way you can over communicate. That's the thing about communication. It goes right along with the power of positivity, right? So we're only communicating either positive things or things that we need. We're not communicating necessarily that we have a ache or a pain or anything like, you know, like that. But if you have a legitimate problem, say you've got a terrible blister on your heel or something like that, and you come to this place where there's somebody standing by to help you, it's okay to communicate that to that person, because they are there to fix the problem. They are there to fix that thing. So if you communicate it to your crew, I don't think there's any issue with that. It's when you're out on the trail and you're communicating it to other runners when there's nothing that you can do about it, that's where it's an issue, because at that point you're just communicating that issue because because it doesn't feel good.
You know, I've got to say that as far as what they say, communication, 90% of communication is body language, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But let's say it is. There is no sidestepping the issue if you're having some problems, if you're struggling. Your people around you, if connected and you're sharing resources, both energy and physical resources, that you can't lie to that person. They've got it. And when you see that in a fellow runner and you realize, man, this guy, gal is tough. I could see what they're going through and they're just sucking it up and they're going to get through this. That inspires me to be positive. It inspires me to work through my issues. It inspires me to suffer in silence because I know that they can see it. And I know that it will change the dynamics of the group by either me expressing my negativity or having them look back and say, wow, Don's working through something. When it's my turn to work through something, I'm going to do it too. So I really like the fact that communication is there regardless. It's just how you express it and how you use it in your mission.
100%. I agree.
Hey, this has been a great conversation with Shoot, Move, and Communicate. We'll take the screenshot from the Instagram post that Chad posted just this week. We really appreciate a great conversation with the training run that you had with Jesse and Mark up north of Virginia somewhere.
We should get them on.
And we need to do another podcast with you with you and Jesse and Mark. How would you feel about that?
Be a good time, that's for sure.
Do you guys have something planned for the future? The threesome, I want to hear about that. I want to hear about what's next on Chad Wright's calendar because there's got to be something.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you ain't shaving. So, you're not shaving, so you've got time.
There's a lot going on right now. I guess in the nearest part of my future is Jesse actually puts on a race called 29029. And what it is they rent an entire mountain. And they set up a base camp at the base of this mountain, and it's all inclusive. And you basically have to climb this mountain until you accumulate 29,029 feet of elevation gain as fast as you can. And you climb the mountain, you ride a gondola down. And he's built this event into it's like a whole wellness retreat that's centered around this race. And he has awesome speakers come out, and it's just a really cool type of community building event. So I'm going to go out there and participate in that in October. That's out in Vermont, and contribute in any way that I can. I'm really looking forward to that. And then also, I don't want to get too into the weeds on this, but I'm getting ready to launch a project called 3 of 7 Project. And it's going to incorporate a couple different things. We're getting ready to stand up a leadership school that's based around outdoor wilderness type backpacking events. And we also are in the process of banking some awesome podcast episodes and a couple other things. And there again, I don't want to get too much into the weeds on that. If you guys are interested in what we got going on at 3 of 7, just stay tuned on Instagram. I'll be posting updates on those projects as they unfold.
Now, we're not getting into the weeds, but maybe just looking at a weed or two. What does 3 of 7 mean?
So basically, the audience that we're looking for is people that want to complete themselves, people that want to better themselves and reach a higher level of humanity and existence. So what 3 of 7 means is the 3 means the 3 aspects of us as humans, which is our body, soul, and spirit. So we are a spirit, we live in a body, and we have a soul. And those 3 aspects have to be sharpened and balanced to reach the number 7, which is the number for completion. So essentially it means complete yourself. And I'll give you a little country boy logic, man. the way I believe is that we are a triune being. We have those three aspects. So the logic here is my lawnmower blade, guys. When I go and sharpen my lawnmower blade, I have to sharpen both sides of that blade exactly the same. If one side is a little sharper than the other, the blade is out of balance and it won't function properly. It won't cut properly. It won't spin. It creates all this vibration. And we are the same as humans. We have to sharpen and nourish those three sides. We're a three-sided blade. And when those three are sharpened and balanced properly, you reach this state of completeness and wholesomeness. And I have a real burden on my heart to help other people find ways to get to that point. Yeah. So that's essentially the mission.
You know, I think about the experience of we've been talking about for the last hour about being out there on the trail is essentially the sharpening stone for these three things you're talking about.
It is, man. And that's the thing. That was something that was said over and over again that day. Iron sharpens iron. We sharpen each other in all three of those aspects, our body, soul. The soul is your mind, will, and emotions. And then your spirit is what connects you to something bigger than yourself.
Well, and one of the things that I find interesting is you would think going out and running 50 miles in this 12-hour period training run, that that's a body thing. You're exercising your body. But what you've done is you've turned it into exercising not only the body, but the soul and the spirit. So you've put that the gameplay into, if you forgive the term, the gameplay into this isn't just exercising your body. We're going to work on the mind. We're going to work on the soul. We're going to work on the spirit. I love that.
Yes. And all three of those things are extremely interconnected and intertwined. And the wonderful thing is that the best place that I found to go out and sharpen those three aspects of our humanity is out in nature, out in the mountains, out on the trail, with like-minded people that want to complete themselves or have a desire to complete themselves. And that's all going to be part of this mission, guys. And I was hesitant to even talk about 307 because it's up and coming, but we're probably, you know, a month or so out from kind of releasing everything, but just stay tuned. I'm hoping and praying it's going to be awesome. I know it's going to be awesome. We can't fail.
So if we have some like-minded listeners, and I imagine we do, because that's what we, there are filters, and the podcast subscriptions are somewhat of a filter.
If you made it this far through the podcast, you're definitely filtered.
You're definitely like-minded. You've gone through the smallest of filter at this point, and there may be only three of us left here on the conversation. I don't know, but the people should follow you on Instagram and watch for 307 and watch for some of these things if they'd like to participate and get involved. Is there room for some like-minded people still left in your programs?
Oh my gosh, there's tons of room, guys. This is my mission, man. I have such a burden for this mission, and so I want it to reach as many people as possible. There's so much room, and I love the nation. I love my trail runners. We're a family. I mean, you guys, if you guys ever see me on the trail, I'm probably going to call you brother. I'm probably going to call you sister, because you guys are my family. So it's the doors are open.
Cool. Cool. Well, let us know as more information comes out. We'd love to help share it with the nation.
Scott, awesome. Yeah, Scott, you have a pretty decent beard, but it pales in comparison. Yeah. I mean, Chad is, he is rocking a serious, serious beard.
Yeah. What was the big, the famous beard guy, Rumpelstiltskin? Did he have a long beard? I know Dumbledore did. And
Rob Carrar has an awesome beard.
Oh, he
Gary Robbins has an awesome beard.
Both of them have good beards and about the same color as Chad, but they don't have the length and the body that what kind of conditioner do you? I'm joking.
I'll leave your beard talk between you guys when you're not offline.
Hey Chad, thank you very much for helping us out and enjoy some of your philosophy. I think that it plays not only into our running lives, but also in our other aspects of our lives, and it makes you kind of think. And I like to think.
Hey guys, as usual, it's my pleasure. I'm so thankful to have the opportunity to come and share with the nation, and so thankful for the platform that you guys have built and just what you guys do with the show. So the pleasure's all mine.
You mentioned a podcast. Do you have a podcast coming up, Chad, that you are creating? Did that slip by us? So we want to help promote it.
Yeah, we are working on one. So we're just banking episodes right now. And again, it's going to revolve around finding the most complete human beings on earth and figuring out how they nurture, maintain, and feed their body, soul, and spirit through their day-to-day lives. We want to give practical applications to our listeners on how they can reach that wholesome, complete state.
We'll make sure that we identify it when you finally release it. I know you'll do the same out there, but subscribe to or follow or like or whatever you snap.
You don't even know how to follow a podcast.
I do not know.
He's been podcasting now for a gazillion years. He doesn't even know how to subscribe.
So do that with Chad Wright and follow his activities. And I like how you use the term missions. And we'll all benefit from it. So go out and run.
Mass.